Is DeepSeek friend or foe? Does DeepSeek really have the potential to impact the world as much as COVID? How will DeepSeek change the market for multinationals operating in China? And what about the compliance issues? Welcome to China Biz, an unscripted podcast dedicated to the exploration of opportunities and challenges for multinational companies in China. We come to you from inside China, and we invite only experts and thought leaders with hands-on experience leading and advising multinational companies in China. Today's guest is Mark Tanner, founder and CEO of China Skinny, a leading consumer insights and trend forecasting agency in Shanghai. My name is Jacob Johansson. I lived and done business in China for 25 years. I'm a strategy and business transformation consultant with PwC China. But this podcast is my private project, and opinions shared here doesn't represent my employer. With that disclaimer out of the way, it's time to get started talking about what everybody in China and maybe the world is talking about, the newly launched Chinese AI app, DeepSeek. Mark Tanner, welcome to China Biz.
Great to be here, Jacob. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. I want to jump straight into the big animals on the savannah in terms of hot topics in China right now, DeepSeek.
Yeah, I love it. I remember back about 4 years ago, and we went into Chinese New Year. Everything was kind of normal, kind of quiet. And then at the other side of Chinese New Year, this thing called COVID had come up, and it obviously changed the world. And fast forward to 2025, and going into Chinese New Year, everyone's winding down late January. Then all of a sudden, this thing called DeepSeek R1 launches, and wow, I think it has the potential to be as big as COVID for the world.
That's a bold statement. Interesting.
Yeah, I think from a long term standpoint, it's pretty massive from both an economic and also geopolitical standpoint.
Tries to set the stage on what is it? What's the hype about? What is setting DeepSeek apart from international competitors?
Yeah, I guess obviously AI has been the talk of the town for a few years now, and effectively who is winning the AI arms race has a real advantage in both economic, military, data, and influence on the planet. And America has been number one, unmistakably unchallenged, even by China's technical prowess is not really measured up until this thing called DeepSeek came along. And I think what is even more spectacular is DeepSeek has done it with much less capital than the big Western tech companies. And what's really good for the world, you could say it was a gift for the world, is it's free. It's open source. So it's unlike the other big tech companies where they're very much keeping it to themselves. It's very proprietary. They own every part of it, and they charge you for it. So I think it's a massive game changer. That's from the end user and from the business standpoint. I think when you get really interesting, you look at what's happening under the hood. And DeepSeek is fascinating in the fact that it uses a lot less power to generate effectively the same outputs for reasoning and as you get in ChatGPT-4. So you're using the cost to train it was about $6 million versus over $100 million for ChatGPT-4. But the really interesting thing is the chips that power the supercomputers that are feeding these AI machines. And all the big boys, the Meta, the OpenAI, the Google, they are estimated to have these supercomputers with about 16,000 chips all running in there, highly spec chips. whereas DeepSeek has done it with 2,000, so 1/8 as many chips, which is great for the world because obviously AI is using a lot of electricity and a lot of water to cool down these big supercomputers and these data centers that are powering the AIs. But it's also China, which has been hamstrung in the AI race by the inability to have the latest and greatest chips. Obviously, there's been all sorts of restrictions for chip exports to China. And they got even tighter again in October 2023. But it's using not even the latest, greatest chips. Those 2,000 are just the NVIDIA's H800 chips, which were approved, well, effectively as good as approved for export back until October 23.
So we both work every day with, we both consumer insights, market trends. We've been monitoring China day in and day out for years. I lived here almost 25 years, and you have an equal long history here. Did you see this coming?
I'm going to be honest. No, I didn't. It's everything from people worried about Taiwan, because Taiwan, obviously, it's not just this historic feeling that China's so protective about Hong Kong. It's also they produce over 2/3 of the world's chips, including 90% of the really high-end ones. So strategically, it is an incredibly important place. And I think everyone's worried about Taiwan. And I think it probably can be a little less worried about it now that the whole chips races has not become as important. And I don't think it's just us that didn't see it coming. You get a lot of the commentary in the media, a lot of investors. You saw a lot of these tech companies losing a massive amount, over $1 trillion in a day, a record that's ever been lost in a single day of trade. It's obviously bounced back a little bit.
I'd like to dive into the consumer experience and what it means for the consumer mindset and consumer behaviors in a bit. But I would like just to keep talking about or try to frame, what does this mean for China? What is this meaning for China? What is this doing for China? How is this a game changer for China?
Well, it's a game changer on many levels. As we're talking about, the chips are a big thing, and China has been investing a lot of money into trying to be self-sufficient. And to be honest, I think they still would rather better chips in the country. Even DeepSeek has said that. But it is less important now. It's proven that they can do pretty remarkable things. It's also, from a symbolic level, it's given China a lot of confidence that they were probably lacking a little bit, particularly when there's so much hype around AI. Despite investing an awful lot, they felt like they were not winning it. And for them to come up with something that is not just as good, but it's done in a lot cheaper way, and it's done without these chips, and it's free and it's open source, that gives you some feel-good factor as a Chinese, both person and then run to the high halls of power. But it also forces this whole protectionism, and the chips that America's really been trying to protect their status as the world superpower, and knowing that chips are a big part of that. And they've tried to stop China from competing by reducing the ability to use the latest chips. And I think China has kind of shown them that whilst these types of embargoes and restrictions can really hinder them in the short term, they in the medium to long term, in this case not even the medium term, it's a bit fruitless. You've got to lead by leading rather than trying to block the other guys.
You mentioned the fact that DeepSeek is open source. How is that good business?
Well, that's good for one. It really opens it up for everyone. Like, if it's not open source, the guy who owns the AI or the company, in this case, is the one that controls it. Whereas open source is collaborative, it's free, it's transparent, and it levels the playing field. So, as a little guy in China, you can use AI in the same way that formerly only the big tech companies could use it. Similarly, not just China, but if you're in Estonia, if you're in Denmark, New Zealand, wherever, it really opens up the door to to really do some wonderful things. And it's what I really love about it is it's ironically coming from China has democratized the whole AI world. And it's really given the little guy a bit of a chance, which in theory is awesome. And in reality, it's never that quite simple, but it's definitely better than it was.
I assume there's also this component on, you know, that from a strategic point of view, win the user, win the market, right? That has been the strategic logic behind all the social media platforms and a lot of other businesses. I'm smiling a bit because it made me think of these share bikes in China, Mobike they used to be called, where different companies just threw bikes in to the market. Extreme overcapacity, but based on this idea that there'll be one or two left standing. And when you win the audience, you will be the one left standing. Of course, as a component of that in terms of allowing or enabling quicker innovation, because the pool of people who contribute to your product development and your technology development is so much bigger than if it's an R&D department in Silicon Valley or Shenzhen for that matter. Now you turn your users into innovators, and they work for free.
The other big thing is obviously what powers, other than chips, what powers AI is data. And the more users you've got, the more data you have. And so that will be a real advantage for, as you say, whoever is winning the AI race.
Of course, there's an elephant in the room here, and that is that everything related to digital in China and content in China has to comply with government regulation and censorship and what have you. What's your thoughts about that? Will this be a limitation of DeepSeek's ability to, one, reach outside of China? Will this be accepted outside of China? Two, will it be a limitation in terms of what DeepSeek can ultimately do as a tool, the fact that there are some limitations or even restrictions?
It's a very good question. It's obviously the likes of OpenAI are probably hoping it's a very relevant question. I think if you look at from a business standpoint, there'll be a lot of Western businesses that will not want to, particularly those that are using AI for the deeper stuff, not just shallow content creation, but the really deep integrated stuff that holds commercial secrecy and things like that, you're going to get a lot of those businesses, even if it's more expensive and less open to use the more Western ones that they know they can trust. They know their data isn't going to get into hands they don't want to. The average consumer, I think it's definitely, you just need to see how far it shot up on those downloads, top of the iPhone downloads chart. Consumers are less concerned, and we've seen that with TikTok. We've seen that with Temu. I think the restrictions that CCP will be putting on DeepSeek, and again, I'm only speculating here, but I can imagine most of it will not even be relevant to most end users in the West. For the average user using AI for the average daily tasks, it's gonna have a bearing.
What does this mean for on a consumer level in China? What will change? How will this influence you and me, our daily lives, how we get on with things? What can we expect to see in terms of impact from this?
Yeah, well, just in the way that ChatGPT has impacted, is starting to increasingly impact daily life in, say, America, it will be the same in China, but on a much grander scale because it is free. And because it is at such an incredible level of reasoning and things, which will only get better as more people use it and as the algorithms are improved. So the average person will use it for lots of things. And I think it'll change everything from that full length of the customer journey. If you look at how people find out information, right now they're going on social media. There might be some people searching on e-commerce. But increasingly, they'll just go to DeepSeek and say, I want to buy healthy, quality biscuits. Can you tell me which ones I should get? And those types of things are really going to impact the customer journey in a way that is quite new and different to the way consumers have selected, have found, have researched products, discovered products. So as a brand, it's going to be really important to, one, make sure that you're using AI in any way you can to enrich the experience for the end consumer. But at the same time, you want to make sure your content and things that feed the DeepSeek algorithm, you're there. It's kind of like SEO on steroids, just like to have the right keywords in the right places. If you wanted to show up on a Google or a Baidu search result, you're going to need to be in the right
place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's a whole nother level of complexity as a marketer.
And it does, I'm speculating like you, but it does have potential disruptive impact on many businesses. If you work in businesses related to content, and it goes everything from writing WeChat posts to even the work I'm doing as a business consultant, a big part of the output from my work is written content, strategy recommendations. And I would assume a lot of this will be impacted, and that will challenge certain types of job or professional roles. And as we know it, that's a question. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. It's a blessing and a curse. And I'll start with the really simple stuff first. As a Western business, it's often hard to know what you can and can't say that will annoy the CCP and the regulators and things. A lot of that work will be done for you because DeepSeek isn't going to spit out some content that's not
already compliant.
Exactly. So there's one thing to worry about. One, it makes things really easy as a content creator, but that is both a blessing and a curse because it's so easy. Everyone can create content it's already crowded enough. You look at all the social media platforms right now, they are just full of content, and that is just a fraction of what it's going to be when content is effectively free to create and incredibly easy, both on time and resources. So as a result, you're going to need more than just great content. You're going to have to look more at deeper engagement with the consumer, whether it be through experiential retail, through community building, all these different things that you'll need to consider, rather than just pumping out these transactional content.
That is an interesting topic because I'm very fascinated by the balance between digitalization and AI versus human-to-human interaction, where a lot of multinationals in China are extremely focused on digital transformation and AI, of course. Sometimes they forget that we also need human interaction. And a lot of my career has been spent working with retailers and consumer goods, for instance. And I see multinationals in China neglecting the value of human interaction, thinking that or concluding because China is so digitally savvy, that's where you put all your your eggs in that basket, right? But I can't help feeling when I look at the data I collect from the market and the insights I get from the CEOs I work with, that I also see a recoil effect where managing to let AI do all the bread and butter stuff, but it means that the real human interaction, the complex conversations, and the ability to listen to sophisticated personal needs, this become more valuable. Do you agree with that logic?
100%, Jacob. I think it's not just about connecting, because I think AI is going to get better and better and better at connecting and things, but it's that emotional engagement. And you can already see it. People were talking about when live streaming bots came out, how they were going to take over live streaming. You won't get scandals with these bots, etc. But it hasn't happened. Like, it's still real life people that are using AI, that are live streaming rather than AI. Whereas if you look at things like chat, if you look at on Tmall, just about everyone, when they're asking a question, it's answered by a bot. At China Skinny, on our website, we have a bot, and it does a remarkable job, and it answers questions, and some pretty sophisticated questions. But at the same time, it's not a scratch on that kind of interpersonal, the type of thing that AI is still a way away from coming close and engaging and making people trust what you're saying at anything other than a surface level answer.
I advise companies I work with, yes, you invest in AI, you do all the digital stuff, but you also step up your physical presence, your human-to-human interaction, and you learn to become really, really good at it. So it's not enough just to have a call center or have staff in your shop. The quality of that physical interaction, the demands or the expectations towards what you get from that interaction will also raise, because AI do all the basic stuff. Actually, the expectations toward physical interaction, walking into a physical store or engaging a company person to person, I think we will all expect something a little bit more premium than what multinationals could get away with before.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a pretty solid prediction. I think the value of human and emotional contact is phenomenal. I think the trap some brands may fall in is they have silos in the way they have in the past with e-commerce and social media and general marketing. They have them too separate. Whereas I think something like AI, I don't think you can look at it as AI and segregate it into one area. I think AI should be looking at how it can enhance everything from both the digital experience, but to that human-to-human contact. So for example, if I walk into your store, you want to arm your shopkeeper with the ability to give a really incredible service. So if there's a way that, I know there's things like facial recognition that have privacy issues, but if you can recognize by incentivizing that person to scan or whatever so you know who they are, whether it be through facial recognition or whatever it is, and then you have all sorts of information about that individual. You know they've been there before, you know what they did, you know a lot about them, and then AI makes it easy and gives you a whole list of recommendations. Then you put that human slant on things. That can make that human contact incredibly enriched. And as you say, the expectations are going to increase. If competitors are doing that, you're going to have to do it as well. So you're going to have, consumers are going to expect more, whether they're online, offline, or somewhere in between.
And this is really the responsibility of the brands and the Western companies, in my opinion. It's a responsibility to make sure that frontline staff is trained, that they are mature, that they're good listeners, all the things that we talk about. And the reason why I mention this is that I see Western consumer goods and even retailers outsource the customer service or the person-to-person interaction, or leave it to their partners in China or even third-party suppliers to design that and manage that, because it's cumbersome and heavy in labor and time. Training is hard in China. Every time you bring your staff up at a certain level, you risk to lose them. That goes everywhere, right? But in my opinion, if you sit in a headquarter outside China, this is your responsibility. And the ironic thing talking about DeepSeek and AI is that the importance of having high standards is going up. And you cannot just say this is up to my local partner or local management. I hope they get it right. If you want to play here and if you want to be relevant here in competition with such professional domestic brands as we are witnessing now, you need to take that ownership and understand how this works in China and be hands-on and make sure that you deliver at a competitive level.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think more than ever now, I think foreign brands need to work harder. They're in many cases on a little bit of a back foot, and they need to double down and make that experience better than these guys that know their customers in many cases better. But it's interesting you bring up training, and like yourself, I've heard that excuse so many times. We spend all this money on training and then they'll leave. The average tenure of our sales staff is under a year, et cetera, et cetera. But AI can also help with that. AI is just has so many dimensions, and you can train and not just have this generic on your smartphone training that's the same for everyone. You can actually create a really rich AI-driven training that can really be personalized to that end user. The one thing about Chinese consumers is they are very digital-centric. They're very open to digital, and obviously there's a consumer in every sales clerk. So you can get these guys very engaged in a training that is rich and rewarding and enlightening. So I think there's just, as you say, there is no excuse for foreign brands now not to have an incredible service.
If you guesstimate, not just 12 months, but maybe a little bit further on, are we going to see certain consumer groups turning away from digital, seeking a more analog life, maybe retro revival, like what we see certain places in Europe where people buy cassette tapes and LPs and old cars and what have you? Are we going to see the same reaction among Chinese consumers where you seek back to something analog, something more tangible, maybe as a response to AI in general and DeepSeek in particular?
I hope so. I think people spend way too much time and are far too reliant on their screens. I'm not 100% sure it will happen. I think it would become more embedded and maybe just less obvious. You won't get people on their screens constantly. It may just be kind of more in the background. But there are some really positive things happening. If you look at the government is now insisting on all primary school kids and all intermediate kids or middle school kids to spend 2 hours a day doing physical exercise, which is, Jesus, compared to not long ago when they had to just focus on learning characters and revolutionary poetry and obviously mass English and all these other things. It's good that I think kids will become a little more rounded. And if they're a little more rounded doing exercise, hopefully that will then translate to a love of more physical, less screen and doing more of that type of thing. And again, it might be, as you say, it might be a nostalgia thing. And nostalgia, that's become a trend in China where they look back to these days and this collective kind of connection that they have with everyone else in China back when life was simpler.
Could this be a trigger of something more communal or seeking relationships or communities or being together with other people? Could that be a unintended side effect from the race of AI in China?
Yeah, I think nostalgia has been on trend for a few years now in China. And I think it's a common connection that people have. Like China has just gone in so many different streams. But back when life was simpler, a lot of Chinese consumers felt a bit life was easier. And so they're really connecting back to that. And again, that may be life with less screens and less tech and things like that. But I expect it will be more about nostalgia 2.0. So a lot of these retro things, but definitely have AI and a tech element connected to them.
Right, right. If you were sitting in the leadership of multinational companies here, would you be concerned about, I'm struggling for the right word here, I'm tempted to say safety. I don't mean it as such, but I mean there are already a lot of fake content out there based on existing AI platforms. Some of it is really good. Some of it is hard to tell. Will this be a threat to owning your own narrative in China? I mean, it's going to be harder for MNC to, I assume, to complain or to control what's going on a Chinese-based AI platform. So is this a threat to the storytelling, to your brand narrative, to your brand ownership, if you are a multinational brand in China? I just want to add, sorry for the long remark, but I want to add that we have seen brands in fashion, I think Dolce & Gabbana, for instance, but there have been other brands which has been under heavy consumer scrutiny based on politics or cultural expropriation or, you know, whatever have you, where sensitive topics have really ignited the Chinese consumers in anger. So I assume with AI becoming a stronger integrated part of how Chinese consumers react, this can also be a tool to hit and punish international brands that you may have a disagreement with.
And really get the volume of numbers. I think it's a very valid point to raise. It's quite concerning that the word DeepSeek sounds a lot like deepfakes. But it's, I think it really reinforces the need to really own your brand channels. And that's, you're starting to see that come around. But in the past, brands spent so much on key opinion leaders that effectively they own their own channel and they say what they want. Whereas if you can build your channels and invest in that and have that followership, that's kind of where you can do it. It's obviously not foolproof, but you have a lot more levers to pull when the fake information comes out or when there's some kind of political scandal.
You can turn my argument 180 degrees and say the opposite, right? Because you can also say that multinational companies who manage to embrace DeepSeek and AI in their communication and brand messaging have received now a free professional tool that actually helped them create stronger narratives and a more coherent story in, towards the Chinese user.
And I also think a more targeted story. I think so many brands just have this generic messaging that they hope will appeal to everyone. Consumers will expect more. They'll expect things that are relevant to them. So AI makes it so much easier on scale to really hone in, have laser focus to certain groups and interests, to write down to the specific consumers.
If you were sitting in Europe, US, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, looking at your China business and reading the news about DeepSeek, what are the 1, 2, 3 things that you would do tomorrow to make sure that you are prepared and ready and understand the opportunities and risks of coming from DeepSeek?
It's a really, really good question, Jacob. It's something that obviously to a lot of people in the West, they may not connect the dots. But I think from a confidence, and I think a lot of foreign brands have not had so much confidence in the China market in the last few years. A lot of that's been geopolitical. A lot of it's been consumer confidence. And I think that DeepSeek will impact both of those things. Geopolitically, obviously, it's reduced the barriers for a lot of these restrictions around exporting to China. There's the whole Taiwan question. But I think it's built the confidence at China right down to consumers, and they'll be feeling a little more chipper than they were this time last month. And when you're feeling good about yourself and your country and other things, you're probably more likely to go out and buy stuff. So I think it's probably going to be a good thing for the Chinese consumer market. And as a brand, probably want to be across that.
So sum it up for us, DeepSeek, a threat or a gift?
I think both, depending on where you're sitting. If you're in DC right now, you're probably looking at DeepSeek and going, oh shit. You look at Donald Trump, he's spending $500 billion on big data centers. And you may not need these big data centers. You may need a lot less processing power than before. So it has the potential to change a lot of massive macro policy and change the direction of billions, if not trillions of dollars. So I think there's still a lot of unknowns how it all pan out, but I'm guessing there's a lot of people in the halls of DC, Brussels, wherever else that are thinking, well, this has just made China a lot more powerful than we thought it was going to be for a long time. So I think it's going to be an interesting period.
Mark Tanner, thank you very much for joining ChinaBiz. Last but not least, you are publishing an excellent newsletter about consumer trends and general developments in China, including DeepSeek.
Thank you, Jacob. Yeah, I guess if you only learn one thing from today, the most important takeaway is to pop down to chinaskinny.com and you can just subscribe, put your name and email address in there. It's free, much like DeepSeek.
With those words, we have reached the end of this episode. China Biz will be back soon with Joyce Chu, president of Inca Census in China, for a conversation about new retail formats and to get an explanation of how this multinational retailer managed to grow double digits in a tough market. Remember to subscribe to China Biz. If you have feedback or ideas, please connect with me on WeChat. My ID is in the description. Or connect with me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.